We're talking jazz with Dan Barnett tonight because his singing, it's been described as veering between Sinatra-esque cruising and something closer to Kurt Elling's adventurousness. I like to throw in a bit of Mark Murphy and Joe Lane into that particular mix. But Dan Barnett comes from a pretty special pedigree here in Sydney. His father, the legendary Sydney bassist Cliff Barnett. Dan, welcome back to Now's the Time.
Well, thanks for having me, Frank. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I'm still recovering from a bit of COVID, so I'm still a little bit croaky with the voice. So I'll let you do most of the talking tonight.
No, that's
Dan.
Okay.
but just to refresh our listeners, it's been a little while since you've been on the program. Tell us how you came through. I know you came from quite a musical family, certainly your dad being the legendary bass player, but you were exposed to a lot of music indeed through your mother and classical music and sort of more mainstream, I guess, music to jazz.
Absolutely. Well, my parents just listened to a lot of music. My dad loved the Ray Brown, you know, Oscar Peterson trio with Ray Brown and those guys, which was, I got lots of that in the house. But my mum loved good singers. And then she would also take me to hear, like we would go to, she had season tickets to the Willoughby Symphony, which is, you know, just up the road from where you are, right?
And, yeah.
And they perform in Chatswood, and we used to go to that quite often, and we go to all sorts of gigs. We would, you know, be walking on the street, and she'd hear some music, and we'd go in. So there was all, I got exposed to so many things, and she'd take me to the theatre, and she'd take me to galleries. And so I was really lucky. My, you know, while Dad was working, Mum would take me to something, you know, and I just grew up around it. And there was rehearsals at home, and there was all sorts of things going on. And then eventually when I started to play, I ended up, you know, going and sitting in on Dad's gigs. And then we ended up doing, you know, lots of gigs together. So it was, and recorded together and did all sorts of things. So, you know, I feel, you know, it's a real blessing. And it's kind of like a, I don't know, the rite of passage thing, isn't it? When your father hands it over to you like that in some way, you know, it was pretty amazing.
Yeah. And even your own big band now, it seems to be cemented in the history of Sydney jazz. I mean, it just seems to have been around and so solid and working so often for many, many years. You've built quite a reputation, not only as a trombone player within that large ensemble, but the leading vocalist as well, and probably the only exponent of the conch shells in Australia.
Well, actually, there are a couple of guys around that play the shells. I know James Greening jumps on the shells every now and again because we sometimes do two shells, you know, in various incarnations. So there are a couple of guys that are into it. But I was lucky enough to go and study with the great Steve Turay, who's like the master, you know, and he's had that beautiful album Sanctified Shells, which is just, you know, he wrote all these amazing shell pieces. And so I sort of got a lot of ideas off him, and I just love the sound of it. You know, it's not, you're not going to be able to play, you know, really intricate, fast bebop on shells, which it's just the sound of the instrument I really gravitated towards, which is the same as the trombone. I heard the trombone and I thought, I really love the sound of that. And I remember talking to James Greening about that, actually saying, you fall in love with the sound of the instrument. And I think that's it. And then it felt like a natural thing for me to go to singing. Like, it's just, I remember my mum taking me to hear Sarah Vaughan when I was, you know, still in my teens. And I remember watching her and just going, I want to do that one day, you know, and that's when I started to really pursue the singing thing too. I really enjoyed, and she just knocked me out. You know, she was just so amazing.
Now, you've taken the big band across to Cuba on at least one occasion. Any thoughts on taking the big band into Russia?
Well, I would not mind doing that at all. I would love to do a big band tour of Russia. We did. I took the big band to Brazil about 10 years ago, and then we went a couple of years ago to Cuba before the year before, you know, all the mayhem ensued here all around the world. And we were playing, like, you know, doing our sort of swing stuff down in Cuba. I didn't want to go and play any Cuban music. Those guys are just so amazing down there.
Yeah.
And same in Brazil, you know. But they love the swing stuff too. They're really into it. With Cuba, I've played the Havana Jazz Festival a couple of times. I went with another of my bands, Swing Rocket, the year before. And then I thought, I'm going to go again and take the big band. So all the guys said, yeah, let's go. So off we went to Cuba, which was insane. This is a wonderful place. I'm not sure if you've been there, but that's just music, music, music all day and night, dancing, and yeah, they're wonderful people. It's amazing. I love the Cubans. Yeah.
Now the Unity Hall gig,
you know, the Unity Band had been playing up there for quite a while. And I'd like, Unity Band has been at the Unity Hall for 50 years, the Unity Jazz Band. And then my big band's been there for 15 years. So we do the first Sunday of the month the big band plays, which is this coming Sunday. And then all the other Sundays, the Unity Hall, the Unity Jazz Band plays as well. So you get, you know, you get some traditional jazz. And then I do my big band thing as well. And the crowds have been great. It's been really fun. There's a dance floor. It's, you know, there's a really good, you know, bar menu. It's really fun place to play. I'm really enjoying being back there because we had such a long break because of, you know, all the COVID stuff. So now we're back into it, and it's really, people are really starting to go, wow, we won't. I think the thing at the moment is that people realise that, you know, they can't take anything for granted anymore. So everybody's realising they've got to get out and hear some music, and they, you know, and they're going to, so people are turning up. I've noticed that at a lot of gigs, a lot of people out of gigs, they really want to be there.
Now, for a gig like the Unity Hall Jazz Band to have lasted 50 years, that's got to, I guess, provide some promise for any jazz artists approaching a venue these days. You know, that's some serious longevity there, and I would imagine throughout those 50 years there would have been several different licensees down at Balmain, you know, dinging the jazz across, you know, 5 decades. That's pretty special, isn't it?
Definitely. I mean, I know in the last 15 years, I think there's been 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 different licensees. So, you know, that's quite a few. But, and it was sort of passed on to, into the family of the original person who booked the band back in 1972. And Gary Walford, the piano player, he did the very first gig there, and he's just retired. He retired at the 50th party. They had a bit of a party at the Unity, and he's unwell, but he's you know, he was still playing, and he jumped up last Sunday and played a few tunes, which was just was great. So yeah, and so what they do now with the Unity Band is they have a rhythm section, and they vary the front line. So you'll see, you know, various people like Brad Child or Al Davey or George Washing Machine or Chris, a young great tenor player Chris O'Day, or various people doing the gig. You know, and if there's guys coming through town, they'll come and sit in, and it's really starting to gather some momentum. That, you know, the way it used to be when I started the gig, which we were doing Fridays and Sundays, you know, Friday nights in there were just crazy. You get all these young kids in there dancing and going mad. You'd play like 9:30 till 12:30, playing swing music, and people would be dancing and just, you know, having a Friday night out. It was really amazing. And it's continued on. So Sundays, people go down there and dance and have a great time. It's a really, really fun gig, you know, irrespective of whether it's the Unity Band or the big band.
The reality is that the Sydney pub jazz scene is all but dried up, and that the fact that this one can still continue, it's sort of like almost the last hurrah. I mean, they are drying up, these pub gigs that, you know, especially in and around Surry Hills, you used to be able to walk past every street corner. There seemed to be a band happening. This is really something that that does need to be preserved, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I say to people, it's the longest running jazz residency in the Southern Hemisphere. I hope I'm right. I feel like I'm right. And I also liken it to the Preservation Hall, you know, like in New Orleans. It's sort of our version of that, because people come down there and sit in and can go and hear some of that traditional music. Sort of, it's pretty special, because a lot of people have played and been through that band. So a lot of musicians who've gone on to have, you know, great careers, like James Morrison. James Morrison came down and had a sit-in with the big band last month. That was our first gig back. People like, you know, Jeff Ball, Bob Bernard, they've all played down there at some stage. Roger Jones, Tom Baker, all, you know, the legends of Australian, you know, swing and music. They've all had something to do with the Unity Hall. That's been and then people have come, people like Wycliffe Gordon, Harry Connick's band have come in there and played at times. You know, Leroy Jones, the great trumpeter from New Orleans, he did a couple of weeks there when he was on tour, and he did a couple of weeks of gigs with the band. So it was, yeah, it's pretty special to be able to say that you've been through or had a sit in or even just seen the band. And, you know, it's got 50 years is such a long time. I sort of pinch myself. I've been doing it for maybe 20, 25 years, perhaps, or something like that. So, and they vary the front line. So I learn off the masters, like, you know, Paul Furness and Jeff Ball. I used to sit with them every Friday night, and he'd go weeks weeks and weeks, and I wouldn't know a song. You know, they were teaching me songs on the bandstand, which is part of the tradition, which is part of the New Orleans tradition.
Yeah.
You learn it all by ear, you know, which is how I sort of started to learn music. Those, a lot of the New Orleans guys, you know, don't read music. They just learn all their stuff by ear. I mean, now a lot of them do, I guess, because they go to university, but a lot of the older guys didn't really read, so they were just learning songs on the bandstand. Teaching the history. It's like an Indigenous culture teaching their, you know, telling their children the stories and making them passing them on through the generations, which is what jazz is.
That's exactly right, and that's such a pure and organic way of understanding this music we call jazz. Because when it comes down to it, it's really simply it's a personal expression. Every single phrase on whatever instrument you're playing or your vocals, it's a personal expression created in that moment.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's exactly right. I couldn't have said it better myself. Yeah, perfectly summed up. Yep. Make sure you come and say hi. Come and say, I heard you on Frank's show. Come and say hi.
Dan Barnett, it's been a pleasure. It's good to have you back from Russia, and it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you once again.
Frank, great to talk to you, mate, and all the best. And I'll look forward to, you know, listening to the show and years more of another 50 years. Here's another 50 years at the Unity. Let's hope so.
Get on the right track, baby.